You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
Hand across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody,
to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Mazzita, a.k.a. Miles, the bridge is over, you! They know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter. And this is episode 305. On today's show, I'm joined by Ashwin Ramnath of Daily Knicks. And we've got some draft chat for you. I know you guys have been looking forward to it. We're going to start off big with a two-parter about the Bridges brothers. Miles Bridges versus Mikal Bridges. Two bridges enter, one leaves a champion. On today's show, we're talking about Mikal. On the next show, we're going to finish up with Miles. Our draft coverage is going to be a little bit different than what Jared did last year. It's going to focus on different questions. So today's episode, which is a two-parter again, Miles versus Mikal, we're going to have an episode on whether the Knicks should consider trading back and what that would look like. We're going to have an episode on what do you do if Trae Young falls to you. And we'll cover other prospects in different ways, but we're going to attack it from a slightly different angle than you may be used to if you've been listening to Locked On Knicks for the entirety of its run. God bless you if you have. Just a reminder that we are on a summer schedule. Twice a week, Tuesday and Thursday nights is when we record. You will probably hear the podcast on Wednesday or Friday, and there will be bonus sodes. Next week, there's going to be three sodes, starting with Miles Bridges. All right, that's it. Let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
So we're here to not really debate Mikal Bridges and Miles Bridges, but to discuss them both, because I don't know about you, but I am not 100% sold on either, although I have found myself at different moments favoring one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I always have to consider, too, is, you know, yeah, we could take one of them, but will they really be able to take minutes away from Courtney Lee?
I know. I feel like we're set at wing. We should just pile up on bigs, just like market inefficiency, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going pretty well for us the last couple of years, so I think that's probably the best way to approach it.
Yeah, but for the sake of argument, yeah. I guess people have been talking about the Bridges boys. They've been linked together for over a year now as potential Knicks picks. They figure to be available around that area, if not taken off the board just before the Knicks. No doubt whichever one is going to have the better career will go at number 8. But, oh, I'm sorry. I'm known for not being one of these LOL Knicks type people. Far and wide. And yet here I am, being a dick about it. Let's talk about both of them. Let's start with Mikal Bridges. I want to give you guys a quick background. He is a redshirt junior out of Villanova, which I believe means that he's actually a senior, but he just didn't start his eligibility until he was a sophomore. He is 21.7 years old, so he'll be 22 before the season starts. One of the older prospects figuring to go that high in the draft. His measurements are not from the combine because he is a coward who refuses to go to the combine and man up. He's listed at 6'7" in a variety of places. He's listed at having a 7-foot wingspan in a variety of places. The Stepien says he's 200 pounds. College Basketball Reference says he's 191. He's somewhere around there. He won the Julius Erving Award for top small forward in the nation this past year, and he's a 2-time NCAA champion. Intangibles, grit, moxie, knowing how to get it done.
Let's scout him, though. Let's talk about it. Let's see if we can figure out what's going on with him. Schwinny, do you want to start with maybe listing a generally agreed-upon strength? Let's start with strengths. What do people say he's good at?
Because we're positive.
Yes.
We're positive here. We are Knicks fans, so there's a lot to be positive about.
Always.
Yes. I would say, I mean, obviously, I think the biggest positive, the reason why he's projected to be a lottery pick is, you know, just his three-point shooting. That's obviously, like, a massive strength of his.
Yes.
He shot 43.5% last season on 6 attempts per game. So, yeah, and actually, I mean, his shot distribution just in general, I think, is another strength of his. So he took, you know, 50% of his total shots were from three, and then 33.5% of his shots were at the rim. So basically, this guy is the opposite of the Knicks' shot distribution from last year.
Right, which is definitely a positive. Speaking more about his three-point shooting, a lot of times when someone is one and done, it's hard to tell if it's fluky, especially with, you know, the shorter line and with, you know, just depending on how what kind of volume they have. Maybe they didn't shoot a ton. Maybe they only shot two a game kind of thing. But he's upped his attempts every year. His eligible freshman season, he had 1.9 attempts per game, shot 30%. His sophomore season, 3.1 attempts per game, shot 39%. And like you said, this past year, he shot 43% on 6 attempts per game. So that seems legit. Also, in, you know, keeping with can this translate to the NBA, a lot of times people point to free throw shooting as a really good barometer of where you're at as a shooter and your ability to bring over that three-point shooting with you to the longer line in the NBA. And his free throw shooting has been 78%, then 91%, and then 85% this past year. So another good sign that he can continue. But, you know, just because I like to examine the perceived wisdom and see if it holds up, are there any chances that this doesn't translate to the NBA? Is there anything that makes you wary of his shot, or do you think this is a really solid skill of his that does have a chance to be elite?
The only thing really about his shot, just, and I'm just speaking from, you know, the perspective of just pure, like, catching and shooting. Now, I don't think we can talk about it a little later about, you know, is he going to be able to run off screens and get off volume and all that kind of stuff. But just from, you know, pure shooting, the only real thing that is a concern in his form is that he shoots it a little bit weird. His release is kind of, so he's a righty, but he shoots with the ball a little bit to the left of his head.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit unorthodox, but again, and I think that holds him back in other areas, but, you know, just as a pure shooter, I have very little concern that, I don't know about 43%. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, I mean, that's a percentage that would make him one of the top 10 shooters, I'm pretty sure, in the league.
Right.
From beyond the arc. So I don't know if you can never really project that. I don't think it's ever safe to project that, but I feel pretty confident that he's going to at least be, you know, a high 30%.
Yeah, I feel good about his shooting too. Another reason, I mean, he does have a high release point. He does have, we mentioned, that 7-foot wingspan. He's got long arms. He can get up there. And I think he is pretty good at coming around screens. I think he's pretty good at squaring to the basket quickly when he's kind of on the move. He's got good body control. I'm going to talk about this more in a little bit, but he's someone when you can say a lot of things about, like, maybe he doesn't have the quickest first step and some other things that we might get to, but he does seem composed. He doesn't seem like he's flailing out there, and that might be a product of being a little bit older, but I feel like he's good at, like, keeping it tight.
Yeah, no, he plays certainly within himself, and I mean, the upside, like the ceiling comparison people have been throwing out there for him has been Klay Thompson, which isn't, like, let's be clear here, when people say ceiling, that's like, oh, if he maximizes all of his tools to the maximum ability, right, that would be the level. Like, so we're not saying that that's, or I'm not saying anyway, maybe you are, I don't think you are, but I'm definitely not saying that his most likely outcome is Klay Thompson. I think that's fucking insane.
No, but he might have a 5% chance of reaching that or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll just throw it out there. My comparison for him is like a souped up pre-Achilles injury Wes Matthews.
That would be a great pick.
Yeah.
Talking about that Wes Matthews. He was great on that Portland team. I mean,
yeah, he was awesome. And I think a lot of what he does translates. I mean, they're just very, very similar players in, I guess you could call it a limited scope offensively. But like you said, I mean, it's not just the fact that he can shoot. It's how he gets off those shots.
Right. So let's keep going with generally agreed upon strengths. These are things that you're going to find when you're researching these guys, not just stuff we're pulling out of our butt. His defense. People talk a lot about his defense. They talk about it being versatile. They say he can guard 1 through 3, got good length and quickness. They say he's got good lateral mobility, and he's also a good on-ball defender, good in team schemes. Is there any chance in your mind that his defense is a little bit overrated? I know when you play for a great team like a Villanova, a lot of times people can kind of give the characteristics of the team to that prospect, especially, you know, when they see success, they say, oh, well, he's doing all these great things. Is there a chance that that's overrated, or do you think what people say about his defense is backed up by what you see on tape?
So I think there are definitely parts of his defense which I don't think that he's the lockdown. Like, all right, I'll give you an example. When I watched Frank last year playing against these little French people, I legit...
That sounded borderline derogatory, but I'll allow it.
They were French.
They were mostly French.
They were French, and we saved them, damn it.
Oh, nice. Is this some World War II action that we're talking about?
I'm trying to bring it back. Okay. Bring it back. So when I watched Frank, like I really felt when I was just watching him, like I probably watched 5 or 6 of his games, and I felt like, wow, this guy is, when he gets up into you, this is a problem. Like you're not going anywhere. You're not comfortable. And then, you know, even this year watching him in the NBA, even at, you know, we all know Frank has to put on weight. We all know a lot of these things about him. But even when he got switched onto bigger guys, you saw him like really get into them with his body. And like, even when they were, you know, like, I mean, I saw him switch. I can't even remember. I think it was Gortat. You know, he got switched onto Gortat in one possession. I probably will forget it at some point. But for right now, I'll never forget it. he just like got into Gortat. And Gortat tried backing him down. But Frank was just, you know, in his ass basically. And he couldn't go anywhere. And he ended up putting up some like awful turnaround shot. Like when I watch McCall, I don't see the same level of like, yeah, he wants to play defense and he's definitely a willing defender, but I don't feel that same level of physicality. I don't think he makes guys as uncomfortable, as Frank does. And like, you know, if we're saying he's going to be an elite defender, I don't know if I really believe that. I think he's going to be a plus defender for sure. But I think that he's not that physical, and that might be because he's like, I mean, you read his dimensions earlier. He's 6'7", 200 pounds isn't exactly like, you know, some ripped dude. I think that's pretty similar to like Tim Hardaway's size and weight, to be honest.
I will say this, though. I'll say this. So a lot of what people, when they talk about McCall versus Miles, they talk about, you know, he's lanky and Miles is beefy. And that is true, but I almost thought while watching some tape, and again, I'm not an expert. I haven't watched every minute of the guy. I've watched a billion highlight reels that I think covered a large variety of plays. But I thought he did play a little bit bigger than his lankiness suggests. And a part where I did see that, I mean, post-ups are less and less a part of NBA basketball every year, but it's still there. And I thought he actually was a better post defender than Miles Bridges. I thought he did when you talk about Frank playing up, I thought he did have a nice wide base and he kind of angled his torso forward in a way where he was, you know, getting good leverage against larger guys. And I don't have access to a cleaning the glass type site for college. I'm not sure where people get these play type numbers, but I saw some videos that referenced his He had a pretty, I don't know if it was elite, but like very good post defense percentile wise, and Miles was very bad.
Yeah, no. So when I say that he doesn't, like, I'm only speaking about the actual, like, you know, really getting into guys. Now, I'm not, like, he's really good at using his length.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, he averaged per 40 last year, 1.9 steals and 1.3 blocks. So he definitely uses his length effectively in terms of, you know, he gets the he definitely fills the box score up in the do shit stats.
Right.
Like he does shit and he uses that length. So he's actually not great at, like, he tries to get over screens, but he sometimes overplays screens, or, you know, like, he's a little bit slender of frame, so he can get caught in a screen, but he uses his length really well to recover. And, you know, he's able to challenge shots and obviously sometimes blocks. And then, like you said, in the post, even if he's not getting into you to the point where, like, you might get into a spot where you feel comfortable to take a shot, but he's so long that he can still contest it and block it. And so, like, that is obviously a major advantage he has. I always wonder about stuff like that, if that'll work as well at the NBA level.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I did see a lot of tape with good shot blocking instincts, but there were a lot of man defense shot blocking. And in college, that makes sense because your length is going to be a real advantage when you're sticking a guy. But are you going to have that same advantage in the NBA where you can just kind of rise up and block him? Are you going to see those same – it wasn't a lot of help side blocks, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, one small thing he does really well, which I think is – it's not even really that small. It's actually kind of a big thing about defense. And I think it's why he's, you know, projects to be a pretty good steals guy. He is really good about – playing the passing lanes without getting cut backdoor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's huge, obviously. And with his length, you know, he's able to essentially cheat on the passing lane without totally overplaying it. I think, don't get me wrong when I say, like, my concerns about his defense are more nitpicky to the point where I'm more concerned that, or not concerned, but I'm more skeptical that he becomes, like, I don't know if, when I saw Frank last year, I thought this guy will probably make an all-NBA, like, he's probably an all-NBA defender at some point in his career. Mm-hmm. And obviously in his rookie season, like, if nothing else, it just, I mean, if I have questions about everything else about his game, I did not have any questions about that. I think that's almost a certainty. And I mean, even like Zach Lowe has written that in his articles. So pretty cool. But like with Mikal, I'm not convinced of that. I think he's going to be a plus defender, and not in like the Courtney Lee fake plus defender where he gets the rep and but isn't actually that good on defense, but like in the way where he's actually good on defense.
I can see that. I do want to talk about one other major, generally agreed upon strength of his. But before I do that, just want to remind everybody that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The number one daily sports podcast network in the entire world. Now for something a little bit more serious. If you or a loved one lived in, worked in, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the September 11th attacks and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available to you. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act, which allows you to claim these benefits, has been extended, but time is limited, unfortunately. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family, and he can help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but for anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast cancer. Please call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify. Okay, so that strength that I want to talk about, we sort of touched on it a little bit, but I want to underline it, circle it, put an exclamation point at the end of it. Significant improvement during his college career. Mm. And, you know, it's a negative that he's older. Of course it is, because you are more concerned that he might be closer to his ceiling. But the one thing that really flies in the face of that is just how much he improved. And really from, not from his freshman to his sophomore campaign, but from his sophomore to junior campaign. And just one quick way to take a look at that is he only played two more minutes between his sophomore campaign and last year's junior campaign. And he went from 9.8 points a game to 17.7 points a game. You know, points per game is sort of like the dumbest stat. It's a real dumb man stat.
Are you about to get on your stats nerd high horse?
No, I am not. There,
I
you
hate
know,
points per game.
Well, I'm PTSD with points per game because it's one of the primary Melo's a goat kind of thing that ignores everything else that's going on. But that's enough Melo shade for now. I think it's significant. You know, the guy doubled his point output.
And you know, I mean, a better way to even illustrate it is his usage went from 15.3 to 23.2, and his efficiency barely. I mean, it dropped from what he had. He was a 67.6 true shooting his sophomore year to 65.5 his junior year. And I mean, with that usage increase, you're totally willing to take up. Like, you'll always make that trade-off if that's available to you.
Yeah.
One thing I just want to mention before, because I'm sure that people, like, he was a redshirt. So he, his freshman year was actually his second year at Villanova.
True.
He didn't play his first year. So I think it's just important to note that, which is why he comes in next year. He's going to be a 22-year-old rookie.
Yes. But I think this is a really important thing to just kind of dwell on for another minute or two, because the, you know, the hoary old cliche, or maybe it's a new cliche, but I think it's true, is that you're not drafting these guys for what they've done already. You're drafting them for what you think they can become. Obviously, that's greatly tied to what they've shown. But when someone does show that they are able to make such huge improvement year over year, you can feel better about someone older when they do something like that. You know, he hasn't plateaued. He hasn't gotten worse. He's done nothing but improve. So it's worth really factoring that into evaluations, I think. As far as far as strengths go, I mean, we've talked about length. That's another big one that people.
I mean, I think you talked. He just like, I mean, you kind of touched on it, Moxie, all that stuff. I mean, we say it, like you kind of said it as a joke. I mean, but like he knows how to play, and so. I don't know. There are guys when I watch them play, like, oh, he's like a pretty good passer, but then you look at the numbers and you know they're not racking up assists. And I think it's like he makes quick decisions. Like he's not one of these guys that's going to catch the ball. I hate it because I'm just gonna I end up sounding like I'm talking about Carmelo, but I could be talking about like 50,000 guys where like you know catch the ball, survey the landscape, jab step, like. It's catch the ball. Do I have a shot? Am I driving here? Okay, I'm not doing any of those things. Let me pass it to somebody else. Move. Like, he's a quick decision maker. He moves off the ball. He's a live body off the ball, right? Like, he just knows how to play. So I don't think he's a particularly great passer or anything like that, but he makes basic reads well. Mm-hmm. He's not going to stop the ball. He's just not somebody that's, at least not yet, and I guess maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later. He's not somebody yet that really understands how to bend defenses and create for others, but that's fine. Like that's, I mean, that's a limitation that, and it's something you have kind of obviously need to work around to an extent, but he's not somebody that's going to bog down your offense and try and dominate what you're doing. He is somebody that is happy to be a cog, but can be a very effective cog if the system that is in place is right.
No, I agree with that. And I'd like to, for the sake of time, although I think this is going to be a two-parter, I'm feeling it in my bones, let's move on to generally agreed upon weaknesses before we get into kind of things that we think he might be better at or might be worse at than people realize. But the kind of the book on him, weakness-wise, I think I'd like to start with what you were just talking about, is shot creation, playmaking. Did not create a ton for himself or for others. And I think a lot of that has to do with something that people tend to mention as a negative with him, which would be his handle.
Yeah, his handles. I mean, it's not Tim Hardaway rookie bad, but it's not very good. And so, like, when you watch all of his drives to the rim, they're all straight line drives.
Yeah.
Like, he has no shake. Like, he's very kind of stiff in the hips. So his crossover is just, it doesn't create some great separation for him. Like, it creates enough space for him to get a shot off sometimes, just because he's so long, and like you talked about, his release point is so high. But it's still like a very much a contested shot. And then, you know, something like I've also noticed watching him, he's just like you said, he's not crafty off the dribble. And so, you know, when he drives, if he kind of senses that he can't get to the bucket, or that, or when help comes, he's not somebody that is going to keep a live dribble,
yeah,
and like pull it out and kind of, you know, take advantage of essentially drawing help or whatever. He picks up his dribble. Like, he always picks up his dribble, and then, you know, that always puts you in a tough position. Like, he's not a turnover machine by any stretch of imagination. No. But those are the moments where, like, if he does commit turnovers, it's usually in moments like that. Or, and then, you know, like I said, he doesn't bog down the offense. If he does bog down the offense, it is in moments like that.
And so this, to me, is the biggest concern with Mikal Bridges. I had in all caps, no shake. When you're watching him, it really is. I'm getting ready to unleash a Canal Street Jason Tatum take by the end of this podcast for Mikal Bridges. But if you watch, and I'll get more into that, but if you watch Jason Tatum at Duke, I mean, he's a better prospect, right? And he's doing things that are incredible right now in the playoffs for a 20-year-old. He's 2 years younger. But I think...
I actually had no idea he was 20. Yeah. I had no clue. They didn't ever mention that at all.
But it's I would say the biggest difference between them, and I think there's more similarities than people might realize, is their shake. I mean, Jason Tatum, he just kind of got that, like, the good, mellow jab step that people are a little bit scared of, and he can, like, pull it back and change direction. And Mikal Bridges he doesn't have that, really, at all right now. But there are a couple things that make me feel a little bit better about it. One is that he is really good on his straight line drives. He's an excellent finisher around the rim. And something that he doesn't get as much credit for, especially in the Mikal versus Miles debate, is he's not as explosive an athlete as Miles Bridges. But he's got some hops, and he likes to yam it on dudes. There are a lot of highlights of him throwing down on dudes, like, hard.
Well, I think it's... He doesn't get that high off the ground, but... No. Because he's so long,
he cocks that arm. It's like, you know.
And I think, like, he has a good, he's not a good vertical leaper, but he's a good horizontal leaper. So, yeah. Like, he's not able to, he doesn't elevate really high, but he can jump from further out than you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, just to, you know, put a number on it, he shot at the rim last year, he shot 67.9%, basically 68%.
That's
68% at the rim last year. So, yeah, like, once he gets there, he's pretty damn good at finishing.
And when you look at him on straight line drives, that's like, if you look at like his straight line drives and like Jason Tatum's straight line drives, I know Tatum's a better prospect, better player, but I think he's got more, I think Mikal has more offensive upside than people give him credit for. I do see the concerns and I share them, but I think there is this element to him that he just, I mentioned this earlier, he looks completely in control of his body. Like, I feel like he's got really good core strength, even though he's skinny. Like, his build is a definite weakness right now, especially compared to Miles, who's kind of built like a truck. You know, he is a little on the thinner side. And especially,
he's 22, so you kind of question. Like,
yes, yeah, like that makes that more troublesome for sure, because he's a little bit older. But when he's on the move, I don't know. I feel like he's totally in control, even though he can't execute the wide variety of moves that you might like to see at his advanced age. But yeah, I think I just talked over you saying he's smooth out there.
Yeah, like he
looks like an NBA-ass wing. Like, I have no problem. I might have problem picturing him being a superstar, but I'd have no problem picturing him being like a really good contributing wing in the mold of exactly what's needed now.
Well, like, I have a bigger problem. So I agree. He's a wing. He's going to be a good wing. Like, I think his floor is basically a straight 3-and-D player, which,
right.
I mean, depending on the team you are and what you have, that can be a quality starter or it can be a really nice bench piece. Like, it's a definite NBA player, though. My question, though, is, like you said, he's a small forward. 6'7", 200 pounds, though. I'm like, all right, can this guy really be a three? Because, like, I'm looking at Tatum or like, even Jaylen Brown. Like, these guys would just body him, man. Like, they would just body him. They're just stronger and more – like, that is a concern for me because if he's a two – and I'm like, I don't like doing this. So, okay, I'll put it this way. If I don't think he can – I don't know if he can check big wings, right? I think he might end up being, like, a guy that checks smaller guards and normal size wings, let's say,
mm-hmm.
right? That might be what he is. And if, like – so if he can't check big wings, that to me is – like, that drives down his value a lot because –
I think he can. So why do you think it's just by looking at his body, or do you have you seen footage with him against bigger wings where you don't think he can bang with them? Like, well, where do you think the problem would come in?
Because I never saw a matchup with him against like an actual game where he played a wing that I would think is like, you know, one of these bigger kind of like almost combo forward types,
right?
Because right? That's what like Jason Tatum is. Essentially.
Sure. Uh huh.
Like I don't remember it anyway. If I did see it, and you know, like that's so I don't know. But I'm just like looking because all right, when I look at Tatum, right? Like for example, he's you know probably you think he's like 6'9". He's like 6'9", 215, 220, I think. Right? Might be more.
I thought he was 6'8", but I mean that whatever. We are kind of quibbling at this point.
I'm talking about more of the weight anyway, more than the
yeah.
height.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, to me, when I look at him, like, what scares me about looking at Tatum is I'm like, dude, this guy is going to add easily like 20 pounds to his body. Like, he's going to be a big dude. Like, I mean, McCall already has what 3 years on this kid, and I don't see any chance where he's adding more than maybe like 10, 15 pounds max, right? Like I just can't see it because if he hasn't done – and like even assuming – okay, yeah, like of course the college weight program isn't the same. They're right. not the same. All that stuff, right? We know this. But like even with those advantages, it's just really hard to project looking at him. Like he just doesn't have a body that makes me think because he's kind of like slim through the hips. He's
yeah,
not,
I think
there's nothing about him that you're like, oh, like, yeah, but just wait till this guy starts, you know, working out with KP's shady doctor.
Well, listen, I mean, that's all like very fair, and I don't think you're wrong. But to me, I just heard so much about how skinny the kid is, and as I watched tape, I kind of forgot by the end. And I know it's against college kids, so maybe that's just what it is, and I'm not doing a good job, you know, projecting him into the NBA. But I watched this guy, and he moved like someone who had a big body he could throw around a little bit. And I know he's a little thinner, but he doesn't strike me as a – he's shorter than him, but he almost seemed like he could be rangy, sneaky, strong, almost like a Tayshaun Prince type.
Yeah, maybe. And
you know, and Tayshaun was a couple inches taller, I think. But he also seemed thin but was like sneakily able to hold his own, was a great defender. I mean, but that's –
and he blocked Reggie Miller's.
I mean, how could you? Him. That's just one of the great NBA highlights of all time. Yeah, I loved that team. Anytime a team doesn't have a star and can, like, you know, if Boston wasn't the worst place on earth, I might be thinking that way about their team this year. But
yeah, I mean, like, anytime you can just sun Reggie Miller, you're doing something right, obviously. No, but, like, this is why I like the Wes Matthews comparison because. Wes was he's stockier and he's shorter.
Yeah, he's pretty thick.
But he's not you like he couldn't check fours at 6'5". Come on, like Wes Matthews is not checking fours. But like 1 to 3, against normal size threes, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
not the jumbo guys, but the normal size threes. Like, I mean, okay, I know Iggy is a big dude, like he's chiseled, but I could see, you know, McCall doing fine against him, right? Because as long as, like, I think he could, you know, as long as he's able to keep the guy in front of him, you know, he would be okay in that matchup, right? Because Iggy isn't like towering over him, right? You right. get what I mean with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So, like, I think 1-3, McCall is fine. If he had that, if I believe in him being able to check, honestly, I'll tell you this: if I thought he could check the Tatum types, like those, I mean, I forget Tatum, like LeBron. I mean, not that anybody can really check LeBron, but you know, those big dudes, even like a Durant. Like if I could see him in those matchups holding his own to a degree, or at least, you know, making life tough on them,
right.
He would be like the guy I 100% want at 9. But I don't think he can do that. And
no, that just concerns me a little bit. Yeah, I think that is. But there's part of me that just has a real easy time picturing him slotting in between KP and Frank. And I think about them playing defense as a unit, and I'm just like, yes. I picture him using his length and really, you know, Frank's bothering people at the point of attack already. They're trying to pass it around his long ass arms. Then you've got McCall playing passing lanes, and this is where I think he's almost the most like Tatum, which is what made me think of it. I'm gonna stop saying because it's a little bit of an unfair and ridiculous comparison.
Tatum
using their length on defense and space. I think.
I feel like we've talked about. We should just call this the Jason Tatum.
He's so good. I fucking hate Danny Ainge. God damn it. Apologize for my language.
I hate his stupid face so much.
But yeah, I think he would be a great fit for the Knicks. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but is there anything that we haven't touched on that you think?
Well,
like,
I guess we could just talk about. So you talked about a little bit fit on the team.
Yeah,
defensively, 100% with you. Like I see that, and that I agree. Like that, if I'm thinking about okay, we got Frank, we got like Frank who is just gonna be his. In a few years, that guy is going to be just a physical specimen. McCall and KP, who, you know, once he's finished working with his guy, is just going to be a beast, apparently. But no, like, I mean, obviously you can see those three and you're like, I would be shocked if we had those three and we weren't at least an above average defense, right? Like, there's almost no way I can see those three playing big minutes together and not being, I would... Imagine.
I'd be shocked if they're not a top 10 defense. I mean, that's top third in the league easily. So,
So in that sense, I 100% get it. He's not like a great defensive rebounder, but he's not a bad defensive rebounder. So that's nice.
Right.
My biggest concern with him is like we talked about, he's not a great shot creator. He's not really comfortable at, you know, just pulling up off the dribble. He's not crafty off the dribble yet. To just get to the rim. A lot of, like, he shot 33.5% of his shots to the rim, but if you really watch how he gets there, it's a lot of it is a product of how well spaced and how well Villanova runs their offense.
Right.
And so, you know, obviously we want to believe that Fizdale and he's going to get the best out of Frank and Moutier, maybe not Moutier, but, you know, whoever, Berg, all these guys. But we don't know what that system is going to look like. And if we don't have a system that is like, you know what I mean? Like, he is so much of a player that needs to be in a defined role where he knows what he's doing and isn't just going to be thrust into a spot where we're like, okay, dude, figure it out. Like, create offense for us.
Right.
I worry that, like, especially without KP right now, at least at the start of next year, we don't know how long he's going to be out, but for at least a good chunk of next year, you know, I feel like we're going to see how such he's great within those limitations. But when you take him out of those limitations, I'm very worried that his efficiency, everything just plummets.
Well, so I have two things to say to that, to look at it in a positive light, which may not come to pass, but I think I have two legitimate reasons, which might, let me just say it. if his three-point shooting translates, that does make him more dangerous off the dribble, even despite his limited handles. If people have to respect his shot at kind of an upper bound of where he might wind up being in terms of, you know, a three-point shooter, if it translates as well as we could hope, that goes a long way toward helping him become a penetrator, which isn't a natural strength because of his lack of shake. But also, I do think he's shown, it's limited, but he doesn't have non-existent dribble moves. He has, on occasion, he has a little kind of nifty spin move that is a little bit slow, but that he's got solid footwork on, I think. I think he's made I did unearth a couple of decent pocket passes. I don't think he's ever going to be a plus-plus creator, but I think there's reason to think that he, not that you would bank on it, but that he could improve there, and that if his shooting does translate, that that gives him a leg up in that area also.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, where, like, the Clay kind of, the Clay comparison comes in, because if you're talking about a player like that, or even Wes Matthews for that matter, right? Like, Wes, let's just talk about Wes, because, I mean, that's the guy I said, souped up version of him. Like, he's way better finishing at the rim than Wes. Like, because he's just more of an athlete, and mm-hmm. he plays above the rim way more than Wes ever did. But, you know, Wes similarly, like, leveraged great three-point shooting into being able to attack closeouts and get to the rim. And, like, that's a very, very basic formula you can follow, but it's effective. And it might be more of a problem when you get into, like, a playoff situation where teams are super, you know, they're game planning for stuff like that. But we're so far away from the playoffs that I don't think that, like, that really needs to be a consideration. And even if it is a consideration, like, he's 22, not 32. He can obviously add a little bit of craft to his game. Like, I think the play with him is if he can just be a better pull-up shooter, that adds so much value to his overall package, right? Because even if he's able to just pull up and shoot effectively when he can't get to the rim, you know, that makes him, like, that's essentially, I mean, he would be, like, one of Courtney Lee, the most annoying thing about Courtney Lee is that he's a good three-point shooter, but when he attacks closeouts, he always settles for the pull-up.
Yes.
Right? Uh-huh. Always settles for the pull-up. Always fucking settles for the pull-up.
Never goes sideways
Never goes sideways. And then even when he gets to the rim, he's like,
floater city. A lot of floaters.
Floater city or like puss out city where he's like, you know, kind of not trying to draw contact, but like has no length so he can't finish. So he ends up putting up some horror, like whatever it is. He just can't do like contested stuff at the rim at all. I don't think Mikal has that problem. So but if you're telling me he can get to like Courtney Lee level on the pull up, I mean, that's a player.
While we're talking comps, at my worst, when I think about Mikal, I'm like, is he just a slightly better Lance Thomas? And then I look up Lance Thomas's numbers, and he never averaged more than 5 points a game in college and never took a three in college.
Dude, how is Lance Thomas still in the NBA?
Like, I can't even. I don't want to get into it. Ron Baker's better than Lance Thomas. Don't.
5 points? Is it serious?
In college, he never averaged more than 5 points per game. I don't know about the NBA, but I would guess not much more. And he never took a single three in college. So I've heard some people talk about that. Maybe this.
What was his leadership per 40?
Yeah, well, you know, he's a dookie, so he slapped the floor and all that shit. I think he. What does it say? Mikal, he reminds me. He's got a little bit of Middleton in him. I feel like he's got a Middleton-y type.
See, I don't see that at all because Middleton could create. Even in college, he could create.
Okay.
That was. And Middleton's actually like, I mean, you look at his assist numbers, that guy can, like, he is.
Yo, Middleton's awesome. That's why I was trying to say.
He's a guy that I'm kind of like, you know, I guess you would consider him a consolation prize, but shit, if the Knicks signed him next summer, I'd be like, all right, we're good.
Middleton's one of these people who people prop up as being good, quote unquote, prop up. And I'm like, that's bullshit. And then I watch him, and I'm like, this guy is awesome. His numbers are good. He's just a productive, good. He's not a superstar, but he's an excellent player. And if they got a Middleton type player,
so I guess Middleton is actually like we should talk about this a little bit. And I think this actually should matter about all prospects that you think about. So Middleton is a guy that, like, he's not a high usage scorer. I mean, he's gotten better. His usage has increased, but he's not like some, he's not one of these like usage monsters, right?
Right.
He's not one of those guys. He, like, you know, he just does a lot of quote unquote winning things without necessarily, you know, like you said, he's not a star, quote unquote, right? But you can make a very decent argument that you would rather have, and I would rather have Middleton than have DeRozan, right? But like Middleton and McCall, I think, falls into this bracket of player. He is a guy that to me is so unlikely to get overpaid on his second contract, which is like, yeah, it's years down the road, but it should be relevant to, like, I mean, this, your front office should be planning to some extent, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years out.
Yeah.
Like, always eyeing the big picture. And so when you're thinking about McCall, like, the fact, like, one, a very appealing part to him, of him, is that I don't think he's ever going to be like a 20 PPG guy, which is fine. Like, that's perfect, because, you know, if you don't, most of the time when you don't, you know, reach this, the mythic like 20 point per game threshold, it's just very unlikely you get overpaid. And right. Even if you do, it ends up being like a Tim Hardaway style overpay, which is an overpay for Tim Hardaway. But it's also not like a crippling contract or just a total, it's not like in the running for worst contract. Like,
right.
Worst contract.
I mean, and if you're, right? If you're a versatile guy, which he projects to be in a lot of ways, especially defensively, not offensive versatility might be a knock on him, but if you can do a lot of little things that aren't necessarily box score things, that could be immensely valuable. The upper bound of this kind of player is a Draymond Green type who doesn't necessarily score a lot, and I'm not saying he's going to be that, but you can bring tremendous value to your team and not score a ton of points.
Yeah, I mean, there's value in just being a cog in the system. Like, if you're willing to just play within the system, there's a value to that that will never show up in your box score. Maybe like now that we have advanced stats that can capture all this on-off stuff, like,
right.
You can capture some of that value.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, ultimately, like, cogs don't get paid. And that matters, because I think when you – especially, you know, in Tim Hardaway's case, using him as an example, we had to overpay to get him because he was some other team's restricted free agent, right? If you draft McCall, I'm almost positive you can keep him on a very team-friendly contract on a second deal, because, like, it's because you control, like, you know what I mean? Like, you
yeah, sure.
are controlling that situation. So it's just very different.
One last thing I want to say about him before we move on to Miles, and you can add some final thoughts if you wish as well, although I'm sure we'll talk about both of them as we continue. When I look at his lack of shake, when I was watching his tape, I thought he just looked so good on his straight line drives that I wonder if we might have seen more if he weren't as almost unchallenged on those as he frequently was. Is it possible that he's got a little bit more there that he didn't have to show because he was so smooth, was good at using a little bit of hesitation, playing off his three-point reputation, and just getting to the rim? And since he could bully people and he had such a good team around him, didn't need to force the issue, potentially get a turnover kind of vibe. Is it possible that I wound up being so impressed with how he got to the basket and the way he controlled his body in air as he kind of absorbed contact and all these other things. I'm like, well, maybe he didn't need to as much. I know he doesn't have it as much. Like, that's for sure. But I also just wonder if there's more there because he wasn't forced into using it.
Yeah, so I think that the upside you're talking about is it's less about he didn't have to use it versus he wasn't asked to use it, right? Like, Jalen Brunson and DiVincenzo and these guys, like, they did a lot of the initiating and creating offensively.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like we talked about, Villanova has a great system. They all play within the system. They have different roles within the system. McCall was, and maybe it's because he can't do it. You know, maybe that's definitely possible. I think that to some extent,
yeah. It
probably is true.
Sure.
But we don't know if he was so, I don't want to say one dimensional offensively, but limited in scope in what he did offensively. Some of that might, I think, is definitely just part of playing a role within a system, and he probably has a little bit more juice than he shows. I just don't know. I don't think he's ever going to be like, I think he's a guy that in his best, at his best when he's like in his peak years, I imagine him in a shot creation role being like, if you ask him to create something, it's going to probably be a dribble pull up from 18 feet out. Most likely that's going to be the shot he creates. But like, you know, if he's your third or fourth best guy, like preferably fourth in that scenario, but if he's your third or fourth best offensive player and he's, and his shooting translates and his finishing at the rim translates, you know, like you're going to be fine with that as long as he can do that one thing. Some, like I said, like if he can just be a Courtney Lee level pull-up shooter, and like I actually don't mean that as an insult. Courtney Lee, it's an annoying thing because he does it so much of like he passes up threes to do it. With McCallum, I'm not worried about him passing up threes actually at all. That's, you know, he's clearly shown not just the ability but the willingness to pull uncontested threes. It's like, so if he can, Courtney Lee is a great pull-up shooter.
Sorry.
Is that a landline phone?
I'm recording this in my parents' house today. Yeah.
Today he says,
"Yeah,
get out of the basement, Ashwin."
I am actually literally in the basement.
There you go, NBA blogger at its finest.
Yeah. So yeah, but where were we? I guess you can just edit all that shit out, right?
Yeah,
that's possible.
Yeah, we can do that, but I don't remember what we were talking about.
We're talking about him pull-up shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think that if he gets to a Courtney Lee level of pull-up shooting, he can be really good.
Yeah, and I don't know that I've ever seen Courtney Lee yam it on anyone like Mikal Bridges likes to. So, all right. I think we're good. Should we talk about Miles now?
Yeah, let's do Miles.
That's it for today's show. Oh, the suspense. Can you guys wait to hear about Miles? I don't know if you can, but you're going to have to. Thank you guys so much, though, to be serious for a moment. Thank you guys so much for listening to Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. If you have not already, tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. If you have not already. Tell your marketing department. They're young. They're hip. They know where it's at. They like podcasts. Tell them about Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Be nice. Don't be mean. Like some of you people giving me one-star review. It's like one dude. One dude was so mean on iTunes. I swear. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. It's in their best interest. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it right down. Always salt the pasta water. And take that for data. That's it for Locked On Knicks. See you guys later. Peace.